So here we are again, season 3, episode 3. This time episodes are much closer together, not 2 years apart. This episode, what are we talking about, Aaron? Talked a little bit about
motorcycle trips and the different types.
Yeah, and we're going to talk a little bit about the Dusty Butt. I know everybody's dying to hear what that's all about. And we also talk a little bit about accessories and kind of setting up your bike for less pain.
And trying to set up this season for new adventures.
Yeah, so check it out. Okay, so yeah, riding season is upon us somewhat, maybe. The weather here in Winnipeg has been very strange. We had some warm spells. It's currently in the, like, whatever, minus 10-ish range. But yeah, I got one of my bikes out earlier in like a couple weeks ago because it was like 7 or 10 degrees or something like that. It wasn't the most fun thing, but that's completely unheard of here. Like normally we don't have that break in the middle.
No, not even.
Where did you go? Just out of curiosity.
Just to the gym.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, and cool. I live like 5 blocks from the gym.
So you were the dude that day at the gym on your motorcycle
in
January.
You were the guy that when people come home from work or wherever and be like, I saw a guy on the motorcycle
exactly.
in January in Winnipeg. It's crazy.
And here he is. His name's
I
want to
be that guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but yeah, with all that being said, you know, this is usually the time when we're starting to like think about what kind of riding we want to do. You know, obviously there's the typical weekly riding that some of us do, like trail riding and stuff like that. You commute with your bike and stuff like that. But I'm talking more about like planned rides. So
adventures.
Yeah, adventures. There you go. That's a good way to put it. Adventure is a very good way to put it. So either of you, do you have any like specific plans or are there any events that you know that are coming up, like whether it's local or whether it's across the border, across like provincial borders that you know of that are coming up this year that are of interest?
I think Mark, you should kind of, we're curious. We're very moto curious right now, because off air in this labyrinth of vintage motorcycle stuff, you alluded to the fact that you and Louie from Moto 49 on Mission Street in Winnipeg, Manitoba, near the Mushroom Factory, across from the Belgian archery.
I can almost smell the mushrooms. Or the shit, I guess.
You said you guys are planning, and you were like very, very, very like,
vague.
Very vague, very cryptic, almost. Like, it was like you guys were going on freaking some kind of space mission.
But it almost feels like it might be.
So can you just tell us what you and Louie are in the planning stages of right now for your motor trip?
All right. The secret is coming out. So have either of you heard about what Iron Butt is?
Iron Butt? No.
No,
I've not.
No, I've definitely had monkey butt before, but I've never had iron butt.
So, Iron Butt is an organization. I think it was founded in the States, but basically, it is a group of motorcycle riders. Like you register into it, and it's like a series of rides that are long, long distance. So it's Iron Butt because your ass is no longer functionable after being on a bike for X amount of time. So they have a whole bunch of different classes of rides in that. So one of them, I think it's called like the Iron Butt 1000, which is pretty basic. It's you have to ride 1,000 miles in 24 hours.
Miles?
Miles.
Not kilometers?
Not kilometers, miles. So 1,600 kilometers in 24 hours.
Whoa.
Okay?
Whoa.
Okay,
wait,
so
what bike are you trying to... Are you thinking
well, just hold on. Yeah. There's more to this. So that's the Iron
My
Butt.
My ass hurts already.
No.
Exactly, yeah. So this is... And this is on pavement. Like this, you could ride it on any roads.
Oh, so it's not geographic location. It's not going from...
No. It's like where just 1,000 miles on any roads you want within 24 hours.
Oof.
So I go to Moto 49. This was like probably a couple months ago. And Louie's like, Mark, I found our next stupid idea of what we should do. And I was like, I love stupid ideas. Let's hear it. So he's like, it's called the Dusty Butt 1000. And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? And he's like, well, you know what the Iron Butt thing is, right? Like, it's like those people who ride like those, like, you know, highway couches, like Gold Wings and stuff like that. And they go like all these long distances. So I was like, yeah. He's like, well, the Dusty Butt 1000. Just the
I'm a married just man.
The DB 1000, we'll call it. So, same principle, 1,000 miles, 24 hours, no pavement. So we're talking gravel or dirt only. You can use pavement as like a hop off road or whatever, but you need to do documented. So you have to actually plan this. You have to plan your route. You need to have a witness at the start and at the end who are not partial to you. And it needs to be like documented and like everything. So you need to document and map out your ride and everything. So let's talk about.
Do you like torture?
Yeah, that's exactly it, right?
Actually, you're into tattoos now. So it's like I can see this kind of being some part sort of that whole
weird masochist thing.
While getting a tattoo.
Yeah.
That's not a bad you want to take my leather mask on your shirt?
Yeah. So, okay. So as you can imagine, like trail riding on a dual sport bike, which is what we're going to use as dual sport bikes for this, is pretty torturous on its own. Like you're pretty sore after that, right? And that's after like, you know, hills and whatever else.
Hence the sheepskin.
Exactly. So what Dan is talking about with sheepskin is off air, I was just saying, I was like starting to like, you know, add all this stuff to my dual sport bike. And one of the things I mentioned was a sheepskin. He's like,
you're how old are you?
Yeah, exactly. The first thing that came up was I was getting old. It's like, no, I'm getting comfortable. So the whole purpose of that is that, you know, even though we're going to do this in the summer, sheepskin is very breathable, like because of the thickness of the wool or whatever, but it gives you a whole bunch of extra padding. So the idea is you put that over top of your seat and it's breathable and it gives you more comfort. Mm. But yeah, that's because 1600 kilometers in 24 hours on gravel roads. So So there's like multiple things you need to do to get ready for this. Obviously, one is mapping. So you need to figure out like where are the roads you're going to take. So we want to try to keep this within Manitoba if we can, which we have a ton of farm roads. We have a ton of gravel, a ton of dirt, all that stuff. Creep into Saskatchewan if we have to, because there it's the same thing as here, right? Lots of gravel and stuff like that.
And pretty flat.
So whatever, we haven't planned it like planned the route like perfectly yet, but we've talked about it. So like, but we're talking about going like around and through Riding Mountain and stuff like that. So we're going to see a vast majority of this province in this ride.
Wow.
So yeah. So like literally this is going to be months of planning for a day of riding, like one actual day
riding.
So what's cool is that there's a guy, so this documented people that have done this, there's never been anyone in Canada that has done this ever. Whoa. Which is surprising. I know, it's surrising
because we have so much
you would think that somebody would have taken this on.
We have a lot of dusty butts.
Yeah. So but there's this guy, I think his Instagram name is Wombattle or something, so he's from Australia and he was the first person to do it on a smaller displacement bike. So most people that have done this, it's been like a BMW 750 GS or 700 GS or 1200 or like KTMs, like bigger bikes.
Sure.
This guy did it on a WR 250, which is like a Yamaha dual sport,
which is what Louis
going to ride it on. And I'm using my Husky FE 350. So,
wow.
Yeah. So like, if you think about the different preparation of doing this, like outside of the mapping, a standard dual sport bike is not equipped to do this, right?
Well, I mean, it can do it.
It can, but are you going to be comfortable?
Yeah, can the rider like
withstand
stick it out?
Yeah,
that's the thing.
So, do you guys have what's your plan? You and Louis are riding. Louis's bike or your bike, whatever, breaks down. Mm-hmm. Do you guys ride or die together, or do you just like, okay, sorry, I need my dusty butt
that would
award.
Be a way better story if one guy broke down and then you ride or died together, like slide together,
just like
you
just
know, like John Denver's full of shit, like that would be awesome.
About to say, just like on Dumb and Dumber, right? I gotta pee, just go, man, just go.
We're on the 23rd hour, man. Just go.
Yeah, exactly. We have not planned for that. I would assume that we would probably just try to fix our bikes or whatever.
Yes.
Like,
you guys are both very resourceful.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I could
so
see you guys
we're
taking
going
care
with
of that.
Tools and all that stuff. So we're not like, I'm not too concerned. Plus we're going to spend, we both have already planned to spend money on the bikes to new tires,
seat concepts,
new chains.
That helps.
Seat concepts, So like we basically started making a list.
It's a brand of seat that is gel that makes your butt feel light and fluffy.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. So what we started doing was we started making like almost like a wish list of like, what do we think our bikes need for this? So like sheepskin was one, bar risers. So your handlebars are quite down, right? So like you can't really have a good sit up posture with the typical dual sport setup. So bar risers to bring the bars up is going to definitely be something that's helpful.
Do you guys look at bikes that have already done this and then just kind of pick it or what?
Well, I don't know. Louis might have. I won't speak for Louis. From my perspective, I'm kind of just thinking of it as, okay, I'm going to be doing good speed. Like you got to do, you're going to have to be doing 100K for the majority of it to make it happen, right?
100K on gravel roads.
Kind of pushing it. Yeah.
You know what? It's. Yeah. I mean, I do it a fair amount. Like when I ride in the Pemina Valley and all that, I'm flying on those.
80, 100
sometimes even more than 100. Hope there's no police listening. But yeah, so like windshield, for example, our bikes have no windshields on them, right? So we're going to need.
Please don't tell me you're getting a windshield.
There are.
There was a guy that came into the store today and he was like, I really like this MT-09.
Oh, yeah.
But it really lacks wind protection. And I started laughing. And I said, no disrespect, but if you are concerned about wind protection, I don't think a motorcycle is for you.
That's
and
fair.
And he started laughing. Yeah. And he's like, yeah, I guess you're right.
And then he walked out and didn't get a sale.
No, just
kidding. One tear in his eye.
No, but like, come on, really. Like,
okay. I totally hear you. And so for both of our bikes, we have found windshields that are basically like temporary ones that you can just mount onto your bike just to shoot the air over your face. Because like that
fatigue,
wind
right?
against it will fatigue.
No,
like
totally.
If it was,
it's
if
a marathon.
It was,
like
yeah.
this is a marathon.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like you're just like riding to the city and back. Like you're riding all day, all night. So
would you, in your plan, is there like, what's your rest schedule look like? Do you ride for like 6 hours and then take like 30, 40? Like what does
so,
it look
yeah.
like?
So for that, like we basically figure we're probably going to have to somewhat do it by feel, right? So like, okay, are we getting to the point now where we have to get off and stretch a little bit or rest or whatever?
Fueling is probably
Fueling's
the time that
piece.
You get a chance to stretch and rest. Like that should be your predetermined
fueling. Oh, right.
Well,
you have fuel depots then.
That's the thing too, is that we have to plot gas stations the whole way across. Like I have a Rotopax on my bike, but it's only like, I think it's maybe a two liter tank. So that's not a lot of gas. It's enough to get you, you know, next little bit to get to a gas station. But,
So let me go a little bit deeper here. What is the deep down desire to do something like this? This isn't comfortable. This isn't necessarily fun. It's not pleasant. It's not easy. There's so many things to say this is a dumb idea. What is the one or two or three things that says, hell yeah, I want to do this?
I mean, for myself, I love the idea that has not been done on Canadian soil, like doing it first time, like recorded, like, yeah, someone probably may have done this, but it not recorded, right? It's not on paper. That's one thing. I don't know, man. I just like, as stupid as it sounds, like I am 43 years old. I've taken on a lot of different things in the recent past. Mm. I'm not too old to do shit. You're never too old to do anything, right? Like you can always start something. So when we talked about this, I was just like, man, this is cool. Like, and like for Louis and I, we're both really busy. Like he has a business that he has to run. He has a young son. For me, I have two teenage boys that are constantly playing sports and stuff like that. My job is busy. I can't really go on like a 1 week trip. I can, it's harder for me to organize and it's harder for us as friends to do something like that. But planning a one-day smash-and-kill-your-back ride over the course of several months and just, like, be like, okay, we're doing it in 2 days from now, and you're done the ride in 1 day, that's epic, what we could do, right?
I also think, and I don't want to put any words in your mouth, so please correct, but knowing you for as long as I have, I have an idea that, well, you work in the tech field, but a big part of your job is like problem solving,
risk.
I suspect.
Yeah.
So this is like a problem solving adventure, because you gotta, we already talked about what some of the things you have to plan, but there's a ton more. We've talked about how like your physical health, you've really ratcheted up several notches over the last couple of years with like powerlifting and nutrition and all of that. So that encompasses that. Mm-hmm. Obviously you love motorcycles and you get to hang out with a friend for a full day and more than a full day. You get to, you're planning this mission with them. So I get it. It really hits for your personality type with those four things that I mentioned. Really encompasses.
That's freaking awesome, Mark.
Yeah. So like we're really excited. Like we talk about it probably a couple times a week. And like I don't go to Moto 49 super, super often right now. So we talk about it in person every time I'm there because we're so excited about it. But we also have like a shared note in like, you know, whatever Apple Notes or whatever. So we have a shared note, which is like where our wish list is and everything, and talking about like what we need to do and starting to plan out.
So what time of year are you planning this?
So we're going to do it in July, which is
hot,
right?
Okay.
But overnight, it's pretty reasonable typically, right? Like it's not usually like 30 degrees.
This is 24 hours, so you're going to be riding holy shit.
So what we had talked about doing is probably starting the ride at like 4 a.m. So start when it's dark, ride your first like few hours while it's like, while the temperature is really good, get as much mileage in as you can. You know, and try to just like hang it out for the whole day and just keep going. Like, I don't know.
Dan, that's awesome. With Louie, when we went to Milwaukee? Minneapolis, yeah. How far was that? How many miles?
Well, Mark, what do you think Minneapolis is? That's about 11 hours.
Is it that much? I'm not even sure.
I think you it's, guys, I would
anyway,
say
that
it's
was
11 hours.
On the CB550, that was hell for me.
Physically, it was really hell?
Oh, yeah, man.
Well, yeah, it's like, because it's a cafe, right?
It was
like,
a cafe.
With the clubbing bars?
Oh, God, Mark. You guys are going to be so beaten up after this thing. It's crazy. That's awesome. It's awesome. I can't wait.
So when I talked to this Australian guy, because, like, I connected with him on Instagram, and I was like, man, like, if you can give us any tips at all as to, like, what you did. So I said, like, first off, like, did you do any like physical body prep in terms of
like did you
working
like
out?
Clench your bunk cheeks at work while you were at work all day? Yeah. Off and on.
If you could see Dan's face while he was saying that. No, but like just saying, like did you have to do like
Dan's
whatever?
Face became the butt. Sorry.
So he said that he's generally in pretty good shape. Like I think he said he bike rides a lot, does like I think he said
bicycle
he does rowing.
Mean,
yeah, like, bicycle. Yeah, like yeah, actually yeah. rides a bike yeah. and whatever. So I think like he okay. said generally he's in pretty good shape and stuff like that. But like Louie and I talked about that and he was like he said you're in pretty good shape, like talking about me because I'm doing powerlifting and stuff and I'm active. But he was like, yeah, he's like there's gonna be stuff that we're gonna have to do to be able to handle that. And like from my perspective, I would say based on riding, what usually hurts me is my lower back. Mm. And that's why like raising the bars is important. But having a solid, like a really stable, solid core, like your abs and your back and stuff is going to be pretty critical. So that's like one of the things, like I work with a personal trainer because of my powerlifting competition stuff. And so I talked to him about this and he was like, yeah, he's like, once your powerlifting competition is done, we're going to have to start focusing on a little bit of endurance stuff, some more mobility type of things and strengthening your core to be able to handle that and stuff.
That makes
I
sense.
Don't think it's necessary, but it'll make it easier.
It'll make it,
it'll make it like more tolerable, I guess.
Instead of like breaking down and crying at the 10th hour, it might happen at the 14th hour.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, it'll be interesting. And like even just choosing gear is going to be interesting too, because it's going to be hot. You know, like, so you got
or you could get one of those prairie cumulus cloud rolling in thunderstorms on, like, who
Which,
knows?
Whatever, yeah. Who
yeah,
knows?
Yeah. That could happen, too.
Yeah.
Right. Would you guys put, so the date of this thing isn't like you have to do it on this date.
Nope.
So would you push it if it's just like, oh, fuck, it's
well,
thunderstorms?
Those, yeah. So the plan, and luckily Louis's partner is a meteorologist, but the plan was to kind of like try to say, okay, we're going to aim for this week of July. And then as we're leading up to that week, be ready to take a day or two off of work like that, like just on like, you know, short notice, and then go and get it done. And that's going to be heavily dependent on weather and stuff. So if we can look at the forecast for the majority of the province, right. Remember, we're covering a lot of ground.
Yeah,
true.
Figure out, okay, you know, it doesn't look like there's much storm cells.
Probably the opposite of a storm chaser.
Yeah, yeah, storm,
storm
runner.
Avoider.
Avoider, yeah.
Hey, I just thought of something while you were talking, and it might sound out of turn, but the more that you're going to be talking about this with other people, there might be some people that will be interested in participating in it. Mm-hmm. And I really want to tell you that keep it to just you and Louis. Do not open it up to anybody else. This is for you and Louis, and it'll be that much better and more manageable and so on and so forth. Don't make it into this event because it's not an event. It's a thing that you're doing for your own personal reasons, you and Louis.
Well, and we like, it's funny because we talked about it, and
like if Aaron starts talking to you on the way home that he wants to do it, tell him to go take a hike.
You're getting out here, buddy.
Dan has this Yamaha that I've ridden, and I know it could do it.
But yeah, we did talk about that. We were like, oh, do we want to like open it up to other people? And well, like Louis's point was, it's like, it's not that we don't want other people to do it, but the more people you add, the less your scheduling works, right? So if you had one person in the fold that couldn't just take a day off on a whim, that's going to make it kind of prohibitive.
And it's
right?
okay to say no.
Honestly, it's okay to say no. For something like this, it's like you, like there's minimum requirements of like, you need to be comfortable going 100K on a gravel road because that's what's going to happen. Like, like if you're not ready to do that speed and you're not comfortable doing it,
right?
Like, it's going to slow this ride down. Right. Right. And like, unfortunately, like time and speed is necessary. Right. I think that Wombattle guy said he did it in 16 hours. So there is time. Like if you do it right, he's in Australia, and Australia probably has longer dirt road, like stretches than we have, I would imagine, but who knows? Like idea. Yeah. Right. So
that's,
but yeah, there's like, there's so much to consider for it. But yeah, I think like you're right though, like keeping it to a very minimum amount of people. They have to be able to go on a whim. They need to be able to deal with this. Like, you know, like I'm not saying that Louis and I are going to make it through this like unscathed. Like this is going to suck.
Totally.
Like, it's not going to
totally.
Be.
It'll be up and down, up and down. And it'll be all like 90% of it will be up in here in your head.
Yeah.
Right. Like it's just about
just
overcoming.
Gotta pushing yourself and making sure you can do it. So yeah, it'll be, I don't know, I'm super, super stoked to do it.
Such a cool concept.
I think it's going to be crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think it fits you guys really well. I think you're going to do well.
Yeah. Yeah. So
cool. So we can't wait to follow up with the podcast and see what the highs and the lows and the in-betweens were on this trip.
Yeah,
it's
for sure.
It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, and like we had talked a little bit about doing some like practice rides, right? Like basically, like I think Louis had said that there were people that were interested in doing some like on off-road stuff from Moto 49. So
cool.
Like Moto 49 does like regular group rides, but it's all highway and stuff like that. But he's saying like, yeah, like we're thinking about, you know, hitting like, there's parts of like the diversion, I think the Seine River diversion, you're allowed to ride in there. So it's like hitting out the city, hitting that diversion and doing some riding out in the grasses in there and stuff. So doing that kind of thing just to get more bike time, like
totally.
Seat time is going to be critical in this to get your body used to it. So, yeah.
Cool.
Be a lot. What about you guys? Is there anything you got planned or any rides that have piqued your interest?
The Dusty Bud 2000.
Yeah, Aaron and I, we've been talking about this Dusty Bud 2000. Like, there's these guys that do the 1200, and they're kind of like, you know, whatever. But, yeah, no.
I haven't thought of, like, motorcycle trips. But in the last episode, I was talking about just getting back in to motorcycling this season and like strategies to assist with that. And my favorite motorcycling memories are always, whether it's even just coming out here, we're at Dan's property right now, Reynolds Ponds, or the camping trip we've done, driving down to Minneapolis with Louie and Dan. Like those are all, that's kind of my thing that I really like. So I would like to repeat, at very least, a motorcycle camping trip this year when we went to Moon Lake. or something similar to that.
Yeah.
That would be great. It doesn't have to be open camping, and maybe we go to like a cabin and park there. Like
I would be down with that too. Yeah. Restaurant, bar, cabin.
I almost, yes. I almost said you're getting soft, and then I was like, nah, he's right.
Yeah, he's yeah. right. Yeah.
Like that was great. And that's like when I think of motorcycling for me, and like what like the memories I've made. Those are always the things that I think of. So I'd like to do more of that. I know we have nothing planned, but I think this fall we could get some form of motorcycle camping / cabining in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So okay, I hope we get that done.
Moto like glamping.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like maybe September, October. If it's October, because if we do cabin, October is still I think reasonable. Like
that's questionable.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, no, you're right. September, October would be nice to ride. Even up to, you know what would be a really cool epic trip? It's up to like the Flin Flon area. Because I've had a couple of friends that have done, they've apparently repaved a big portion of the highway that goes northwest of like Ponton area where you go up to Flin Flon. And it's like super smooth and butter and turns and twists. And then like Flin Flon, like home of Flinterberry Flanagan. Like it's just this weird rocky place in the middle of nowhere that people call home. So I think that would be kind of a possible cool
Mark,
October
have
trip.
You been to Flin Flon?
Yeah, I even know that trick where if you look at the statue at a certain angle, his thumb looks like it's his penis. It's a thing. Yeah, it's actually a thing.
I've never been to Flin Flon, so I'm always up for going to somewhere new.
So, you know, just throwing it out there, you know, I'm sure they have some cabins for rent up in Flin
like, and just straight up camping. If we did just straight up camping, I'd say I'd limit it to September. October, you're packing light motorcycle, so right, you don't want
to... We'll basically have to be like three guys in a tent.
That's right.
Yeah.
Which, body
isn't too bad. I'd be okay.
But that for me, that would be what I would love to get done this year.
Okay.
Let's and do then, it. What about you, Dan? Anything?
My wife, Cherry, she's a big fan of Babes Ride Out. Borrego, California is where it started. It's been in Joshua Tree. I think she's been there in California maybe three times. She's done the East Coast New York Babes Ride Out once. And this year they announced that they're going to do a Babes Ride Out in Deadwood, South Dakota.
Woo!
And Manitoba, South Dakota. That's a day's ride there. And so it's happening in July. So right now there's four of us involved. And it is open to friends, moto friends here. So Brad, Chelsea, Cherry, and I are planning on riding down to South Dakota, and the Babes All Women's Moto Camp Out event happens for 2-3 days. So they do their own thing, sans men, and then whoever comes down as partners in crime do their own thing for those 3 days, get in trouble, drink, all that kind of stuff, and then meet up again. And it's South Dakota. It's like, you know, home of Sturgis, home of Crazy Horse. It's just a really incredible place. Actually, I love South Dakota. I love South Dakota. I love Montana. If you've never been, and I'm not talking Sturgis. Sturgis is just like kind of a circus, but there's so much more cool history in that area. Some of it good, some of it bad, but it is history, and it's definitely living history, and it's really cool to experience on a motorcycle. So that's the plan, July. I'm going to break free and rip it down to South Dakota.
Very cool.
That's awesome. Yeah, I haven't ridden down there. Actually, I don't even think I've been to South Dakota. I've been to North Dakota and Minnesota and stuff like that. Yeah. But like, just like, yeah, seeing lots of pictures and stuff like that from others that have gone there. Like, it just looks like an amazing place to, like you said, by motorcycle or even, I mean, by car. But it's about motorcycles, I think, at the end of the day.
You've gone to some of these events before, Dan, and or maybe not events, but motorcycle trips where you've trailered bikes.
Yeah.
Why drive the bike versus trailer them? What makes that decision?
Okay, so one of the times, I've been to South Dakota a few, one of the times and the only time that I trailered was I took my Honda CB750.
Right.
And I wasn't quite sure of its reliability, so I trailered it down there, and sure as fuck, when I got there, the elevation changed and something jiggled in my fucking carbs on the way there, and my CB750 absolutely shit the bed. So I lost a day and a half trying to figure shit out to get it running.
The carbs messed up?
Yeah, the carbs messed up.
And then how did you get it going again?
I went to Sturgis and I rented an Indian for 3 days. And I rode a rental bike when I was down there. So, yeah, and the time after that I took
What ended up being wrong with it? You got it running again.
Well, actually. You know, like, I don't know, that CB750... Up until Clint McDonald of Ox Motorcycles, you know that guy?
I've heard of him.
He's a good guy. Up until that, I had honestly, 3 or 4 solid mechanics, bike mechanics, work on my CB750 to get the carburetor air fuel mixture thing figured out. And it would be okay for 100 kilometers and then it would shit the bed. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I want to throw this thing. I want to take this thing down a hill. Make a ramp, like a Mountain Dew commercial, and throw it into a lake somewhere, and it sinks at the very bottom and becomes a haven for bass. Yeah. I didn't want it to ride it anymore, but then I took it to Clint McDonald, and he said, I can fix your bike, and I paid him money, and he fixed it. We became friends, and that fucking bike right there is my favorite bike that I own.
That's gorgeous. I love that. And like, I ride it. Is so great.
So well, now it's dialed in. This thing could do, you know what? It should go to South Dakota.
There you go. Yeah,
it should go to South Dakota.
That's how we met. Actually, we met twice in a way. We met the first time when I think it was Cherry was looking for a bike, and my friend Christian. Clint wasn't there, but it was at the time it was Clint, Christian, myself that were Ox Motorcycles, just a hobby kind of business. We did it 2 days a week. And you guys were looking at a 450 for Cherry, I believe. Yeah, and Christian and I were trying to show, and we couldn't even get it started when you guys came. Like, it was wintertime, mind you.
Yes.
But we were trying to kick that thing over, and like, oh, I think maybe we got it going. But it was hell getting that thing started. That bike was always problems. And then you guys left, didn't buy the bike. And then that was it. And then I think the 750 is what brought you back. And at that point, Ox was more of a full-time business. Clint and myself, and I remember you coming, and we were still dialing in the carbs when you came back. Like, we ripped them off and put them back in. I made adjustments. I can't remember even what we were doing. You were like, you guys pull those out really fast. Like, I remember you specifically saying that. It's like, we've pulled these out like a dozen times already.
And there's 4 of them.
And we were fast at it at that time. We just knew there's little tricks of just like pulling back the boot, whatever.
That's very cool. On that bike,
I remember that. And then because I was trying to think of Mark and I drove up here today. We were just talking about how we kind of all met. And it was all through Ox to some extent, like all of us.
Mm-hmm. That's wild. Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I met you guys through the Growler. Like, I was.
But you were coming to Ox Motorcycles for picking up. I remember you coming during business hours, and you would like be buying a part for your bike, and you would show up on your original bike, your original Prairie.
Oh yeah,
bike.
The CB400 I had. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. It's true. Yeah, it's it's really interesting how all of that has like evolved, and like, I mean, all of my, or the majority of my closest friends right now are all people that I've met through motorcycling and like off-road riding and stuff like that. And, you know, it's just like, what's the Honda thing? You meet the nicest people on a Honda.
Right.
I mean, really just in general on a motorcycle, I think is accurate because just so many just high quality people. And same thing, like, you know, all the people that go to different events like the Moto Social and the Growler and stuff like that. Like, you know, it's just we have a very rich community of excellent people through the motorcycle community here.
Agreed. One other topic that we talked about very briefly when you were mentioning the Dusty Butt Challenge was motorcycle accessories, like you're doing the sheepskin stuff and that. I remember you talking about you might have some other accessory things that you wanted to touch on. I'm not sure if that was it or if there was something very specific or other things.
No, like what I was thinking about was like, you know, depending on your bike and what kind of person you are, you will have different bike accessories, right? So like for me, a couple of the go-to ones I have that are like super plain Jane are like those double take mirrors, which are the ones that you can fold in. Like they just unscrew and they fold in. you could hit a tree with them and they don't break. Like they're amazing mirrors. Mm. So that's one thing. And then like a phone holder. So when we do trail riding out here, I usually use my phone to like plot out the GPS of where we've gone and all that. So I know, you know, where we've, I don't really care how long it is and all that, but it shows where we've gone. So if we want to go back there. So those are like a couple of the like critical ones for me, but that's dependent on my riding. Like for you, Dan, are there specific accessories or if any that you have on any of your bikes that are like things that don't, that the bike didn't come with?
Okay. So you,
like
you,
bags or whatever it could right, be. Yeah.
You hit on like a phone, a mm-hmm. phone mount. And I am very, very adamant.
Against that?
I am.
Yeah.
I'm very against, I'm very against quad locks. I'm very against any kind of phone mount on a motorcycle. And this is the reason why. There's two important reasons. Honestly, the first reason is human nature. If you're in your car and you have your phone, somebody texts you, somebody calls you,
you're gonna look.
You want to check your yeah. Instagram, you look at it. You're in a car. When you're on a motorcycle, I know human nature, you will probably do the same thing. And you can afford a second mistake sometimes in a car. You cannot on a yeah, motorcycle.
That's
and
true.
I don't trust myself to have access to my phone while I'm riding my motorcycle. So I will never, ever have a phone mounted on my bike. Second reason is because we are continuously hooked up to our phone, and motorcycles for me is that one specific outlet of freedom and disconnection from all of these things that we're inundated with 24/7. Mm-hmm. And it's a sacred place to be on a motorcycle, and a phone has no place in my opinion on a motorcycle. So when people come into the store and ask if, hey, do you have a cell phone mount holder? No.
Yeah, when you're on the bike, do you listen to music sometimes?
I listen to music, so I hook it up. I only listen to music if I am on the highway.
Sure.
As soon as I get into the city limits, yeah, I turn off my music because you need all 27 senses to stay alive.
Yeah.
But I play my Apple Music playlists on my Sennheiser earbuds when I travel, and it just is on a playlist and I tuck it in and that's it.
Yeah.
That's what I, and like I typically, so when I was talking about the phone mount thing, I have that on my dual sport and I use it for trail riding. When I'm in the city, I do kind of the same thing as you. If I need to use like a mapping system like Waze or something like that because of where I'm going, I get it set up so I can hear it in my ears. And then I put my phone in my pocket or in my jacket pocket.
So it'll say turn left. Still,
it'll be like, turn left here.
That.
Yeah,
that's good.
So then you have it going, and you're not looking at the things on your phone. Plus, my phone has that drive sensor. So once you start driving and it recognizes that you're driving, it puts my phone into do not disturb. So messages wouldn't come up anyway.
Oh, okay.
So that's like
super
helpful. So
there are kind of things to circumvent that.
Yeah.
Distraction.
Yeah. But to your point, like 100% to your point, those two reasons are 100% valid. Like the distraction, that is your life.
Yeah.
100%. And then the other side of it too is like, yeah, you're out there, it's just you and the machine. Like we've talked about this probably on almost every episode, but again, it's like you don't want anything to take you out of that. Like it's that one time where you're disconnected from everything else. It's you, the machine, and like your, like the ethos or like the world, mm-hmm. and you're just riding and you're in that moment. And putting a phone in that does take you out of that mm-hmm. moment, right? So
it does.
What about you, Aaron? Do you have, like, is there anything, like, specific that
things
you're...
Things I didn't have. Like, I already alluded to the things I already said the things that I enjoy doing. My most memorable things are some form of a motorcycle trip. And I drive a 77 CB550 with cafe bars. And
it's so freaking cool, Aaron.
It's like
it's so stock, that thing. It's so
the
nice.
The hunch overness really sucks. So I next longer trip, I'm definitely just going to put some form of a regular bar on there just to right my posture a bit. And then a throttle lock of some type as well. Because when we went to Minnesota, there was one point in time, like my forearm was just like jammed up, just jammed up my for the throttle. And I'm like, oh man, this sucks so much. And then Louie and I traded bikes for a very short stint. Like, it was literally, I think we went from like maybe our hotel to the bar or something like that. And it's like, oh, let's just try each other. Okay, great. And Louie has like a newer Triumph mm-hmm. bike. And I was like, oh my God, this is so nice.
It doesn't have a 40 PSI spring on
yeah,
the
yeah, exactly. Yeah, this is so, I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. I like, so a throttle lock. And then I really appreciate like the nicer cargo bags, like the leather bags, saddle right. bags on the bike. I just had El Cheapos that were just like, it'll get me through. But I would also update those. So those would yeah. be my thing. So it would be update my bars for just a proper sitting position mm-hmm. yes. or closer to mm-hmm. a throttle lock and nicer. That's it's more aesthetic in a way, but they're functional too. The way the bags look.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I always find like one thing that like good bags to me, like regardless of like the materials and stuff like that, are ones that you can take off easily and that you can like carry easily, right? Yeah. Like the ones, like these ones that I have, they weren't super expensive, but basically they have handles on the top, so once yeah. you unlatch them, it's like you're mm. carrying a suitcase, right? Like it just, like you can just pull them off. So
ideal,
like things like that are pretty important too. But yeah, cool. No, that's a really good point. Like comfort on a bike comes in many different forms. It's not always just the seat. It's like, I hate using this term, but or this analogy, but I work at a desk all day. Your ergonomics at your desk will they, like, literally there's like studies that show that like people who work at desks, that is what shortens their lifespan because of ergonomics and because of the fact that wow. you're sitting all day and all that stuff. Right. So it's the same thing on a motorcycle. Like if you're sitting in a terrible mm-hmm. ergonomic position for a long time, not only are you like kind of hurting your body and you're making it more difficult, like you're going to not want to ride as much. That's because right. you're uncomfortable. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's like, we all want to be on our motorcycles more. So right. why not set it up so it's comfortable and so that you want to be on it more.
Mark, earlier you, on the other podcast, you kind of alluded to like for your dusty butt upcoming run, you want to have these kind of shorter runs to condition your butt mm-hmm. and to condition your body into riding. And it kind of reminds me of the trip that Cherry and I planned a few years ago from Manitoba to Portland on our motorcycles. We did it, and I remember very specifically the first day we left here, Manitoba, and our first place was Bismarck, North Dakota. We mm-hmm. were still in North Dakota. We rode pretty much all day. We had some stops. We had some equipment changes and gear and all that kind of stuff. But anyways, we rode to Bismarck, North Dakota. We ended up pulling off into this field, and we were both so physically exhausted and in so much pain, our butts, our backs, our arms, our wrists. We lay down in the field and we looked up in the sky and we said, how the hell are we gonna get all the way to Portland, and we have 3 weeks ahead of us? And we just laid there, and what we did is we dusted our butts off, we got back on our bikes, and we put another day in. And then after that, we put another day in. And yeah. then, you know what? The body is an incredible machine.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it kind of just adapts. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of the beauty of motorcycles, is you can plan as much as you want to make your bike as comfortable as possible. But you also got to kind of put some faith and trust in your body to just, you know, the adrenaline clicks in.
Yeah.
And you just kind of, you know, new sights. This is all foreign country. And somehow, some way, you just eat that elephant.
Well, and you yes. were saying too, like it's a mind thing too, right? Like you're it's mind over matter. You have to convince yourself that you can do it, because as soon as your mind is out of it, your body will follow, right?
So. Yeah, exactly.
I don't keep bringing up the Minneapolis trip, but when we were driving out there, we did it in one day. Like we left in the morning, we got there by. We yeah. drove straight,
but all the fucking hot dogs were gone. Do you remember that?
I was yes, so,
it was like I do some remember kind of that. Open house at the right, what right. was that place? Moto Collective.
Moto Collective.
Yeah, it was a hot dog free kind of beer free hot dog night, and we were yeah. so amped. We're like, oh, at least we're gonna get hot dogs, and we got there, and they're like, yeah, we're all out.
We're all out.
But and then we drank some beer.
We drank beer. We spent time with the guy that converted, or I'm not sure he even converted those vans, the old, like,
was that the same day or the next day?
That was the same day. That all happened the same day.
Holy crap.
Because then we went to a hotel, and basically we spent 2 days to come back. That was the nice part.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We went up through Duluth. And then
Duluth, and then where
International Falls,
and then to speak to that, your body adapts. Like I remember, within the first, I don't know, 4 hours
when you were crying.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, I remember that part.
I was surprised you could see that while we're on bikes. But yeah, when I was crying, at 4 or 5 hours, I was just because this has probably been mentioned on a previous podcast or whatever. But the whole thing was Dan called me on like. I think it was a Thursday or a Wednesday being like, hey, would you want to go on a motorcycle road trip to Minneapolis for this Moto Collective like gathering? It's like a bunch of people go there, blah, blah, blah. It's like, that sounds great. Sure. When is it? It's like, it's this, we'd leave this Friday morning. and I was just like, oh, okay. And then I realized that it was like the sweet spot because if I had a little more time, one of two things would have happened. I would have, if I had like 4 days, I would have backed out being like, oh, I have
I
like
I thought
a,
you were going to say you would have procrastinated
no,
for 3 days.
No, I would have had to realize like, I have to do a lot of stuff to my old motorcycle to feel even a little bit competent on like the American highways that just fly.
Yes.
My bike did die at one point. We fixed
on
it.
On the interstate, yeah.
On the interstate. Luckily, I was on the right-hand lane, so I could die into the shoulder. but I always had that fear in the back of my head when I had to be in the left lane for like merging traffic, like, don't die now. and if I had more time, then I would have like worked on my bike. But it was just enough time not to think about it and just go. And then... going down there was like, and I was, my back was hurting, everything because of the cafe bars and the bike was dying. So it was constant stress of being like, oh, don't die and don't die. But on the way back, I'm not sure if you remember Dan, but there was that one stretch of road that Louis, you and me were on and we were riding kind of like into the sunset. And it was like this beautiful American highway. And it was windy and it was treed. And there was like no other traffic on either direction. And we were just like, and all of a sudden, like all the pains in my body kind of like disappeared. And I was just like, wow, this is worth all of that other stuff just for this part. It was nice. It was nice. Yeah.
I remember that. Yeah. That was moments before... I smoked that Canada Goose on the highway.
Oh my God, I'm like, what's Dan doing? He's...
I was driving down the highway, whatever, buck 10, and then I see these two geese on the shoulder standing there, and I'm like, oh, cool. And then the one goose started walking towards...
Like the middle of the road?
The middle of the road, and I was like, dude, do not do that. Do not. And as I got closer, he stopped, and then just as I was approaching them, dude walked right out, and I smoked him at 110. And a goose is big.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Luckily, he didn't attack like that one that attacked Clint.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That's on that closed circuit television, he didn't leave the ground, and my front tire took care of him. But yeah, I remember that because then moments after we hit that kind of Zen moment.
Zen, Zen moment.
Northern,
that's a good way to say
Northern
it.
Minnesota. There, that was beautiful.
Nice. Yeah.
Cool. Well, hey dudes, that's been a really great episode, and it's been so good talking. I feel like we're really close to getting back out there, which isn't really true, but it's not that far away.
Yep,
that's true.
So let's make some stories this summer, okay?
Yeah,
for sure. Let's have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, perfect. Sounds good.